Hey there, beautiful souls. Welcome to Interviews, the podcast where we dive deep into the realms of therapy, healing, and intentional living. I'm your guide on this adventure, Ivory. Are you ready to embark on a transformative journey with me? Whether you're navigating the complexities of trauma, embracing intentional parenting, or seeking self-help strategies, this podcast is your sanctuary. Interviews is not just a podcast, it's a community. A safe space where stories unfold and healing takes center stage. Your story matters. And here, courageous storytelling is the heartbeat of our existence. We'll be exploring powerful themes like healing, navigating the intricacies of foster care, the strength found in survival, the beauty of reclamation, and the pure bliss of joy. So if you're ready to join hands with a community that understands, subscribe now. Let's walk this path together because the journey toward understanding and well-being starts right here, right now. Welcome to Interviews, where every step is a celebration of your resilience and a testament to the incredible strength within you. Let's make this journey unforgettable. Okay, hello everyone, and happy April. April is a month of many things around the topic of health, and one of them happens to be sexual health and sexual health awareness. And so today on my podcast, my name is Ivory, by the way, we're going to be discussing something that requires a trigger warning. So here it is for you, trigger warning, sexual assault. Really quickly, a disclaimer, neither one of us is medical or legal professionals, and we highly advise that you seek medical or legal professionals if you need to do that. But we just want to put that out there. This is conversation that we hope will facilitate healing and community. All right. So my guest today is Dallas Wilson. Hey, Dallas.
Hi, Ivory. So yeah, as Ivory said, my name's Dallas Wilson. It's a pleasure to be able to speak with you today on your podcast. And this is a heavy topic, you know, and I've been really trying to think about how I personally want to approach this. And I know for me, addressing heavy things is a little bit more palatable if I'm able to have like a lightness and release and no judgment for like, you know, so if you and I like joke a little bit or like we're laughing, like it is still a very heavy topic. And, you know, for me, I just find whatever way fits best to be able to discuss not only my own personal traumas and experiences, but just, you know, just such a heavy collective shared topic, you know.
Likewise, because this conversation is not just about listening, but it's also about holding space for other people to share their stories and their experiences. Holding space for differences of opinions about different things, but doing so in a respectful, loving, kind, positively intended way. And so hopefully that is what we have happening here today. So excited to talk about these meaningful things. But before we jump into it, you know, both of us were former educators. We have to give y'all some definitions so that we can be on one accord about what it is that we're even discussing. So first and foremost, and I got this from a government website. It is justice.gov. This is their definition of sexual assault. The term sexual assault means any non-consensual sexual act prescribed by federal, tribal, or state law, including when the victim lacks capacity to consent. A follow-up definition for consent. And this is from actually the website RAIN, which is a website designed to support survivors of sexual assault. RAIN defines consent as, quote unquote, there are no single definitions of consent. Each state sets its own definition, either in law or through court cases. In general, there are three main ways that states analyze consent in relation to sexual acts. The first is affirmative consent. Did the person express overt actions or words indicating agreements for sexual acts? Number two is freely given consent. Was the consent offered of the person's own free will without being induced by fraud, coercion, violence, or threat of violence? last but not least, number three, capacity to consent. Did the individual have the capacity or legal ability to consent? First and foremost, Dallas, I think it's incredibly frustrating that states have no legal definition for consent, especially when you're talking about sexual assault. So I don't know if we want to start there. We definitely could. And I think this is just a plug for people who are able and capable, willing and wanting to advocate for legal safeties and provisions in terms of sexual assault. We need some definitions, right? We need definitions that are standard across the board. Rape shouldn't be considered, or sexual assault shouldn't be considered one thing in California and a different thing in Maine.
Exactly. No,
sexual assault. So how do you feel
about that? I think because most of these laws as well were created by men, right? Like, let's be honest, and white men, the fact that you have 50 states with, you know, millions and millions of people, like all throughout the US, and there's not one solid over-encompassing federal law that can really clearly define what sexual assault is. And, you know, does that mean that there's no one definition for rape? Does that mean that there's no one definition for consent? You know, all of this stuff. And that really, that's what we're living in, like this society. And in my experiences, I've dealt with men who have made their own rules for what each of these kind of topics and definitions are. And, you know, you and I, we have our own like rules too, but sometimes the rules do not like overlap, or even, you know, they're not on the same page, right? And so for me, I feel highly uncomfortable being a Black woman, navigating this world, being out in the world when there are no like legal, there's no legal 100% like consensus for what this stuff is. So it's just kind of like, it's like living out in the wild, like, you know, like.
Yep. And if there's no legal consensus, there's no legal understanding. And if there's no legal understanding, there's no legal protections. And I always say that oppression is profitable, right? So what would be the profit in this situation? The profit is that people who perpetuate sexual assault get to continue to do as they please. And often we know, based on history, right, that these same people who made these definitions, or lack thereof, who created a system that doesn't require a federal definition for sexual assault, for rape, for consent, these same people are often perpetuators of sexual assault, rape, exactly, and consent issues. And so, again, this is where you need to get involved. This is where you need to vote. This is where you need to talk to your legislators. But I digress. So let's personalize this a little bit more. And I don't really believe in telling the stories of others. So we're going to like try our best to not do that, right? But some of my story does overlap with other people. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to try to personally be mindful of that. And I believe that you believe in consent as well, doubtless. And so you're going to be mindful of that as too. We don't tell other people's stories without their permission. But is there anything you'd like to share with us today about the topic of sexual assault?
Yes, definitely. So I had a rough reunion back to the United States. As Ivory knows, I was living abroad for 6 years. And then in 2021, I came back to America, or 2020. So It was a rough transition because it was during the pandemic. For me, I wanted to like really make all these connections with people. And so there's this element of that too. Like when you have experienced assault, trauma, rape, things like this, sometimes you're at a very vulnerable place. And for me, I was, you know, socially disconnected and, you know, got on some dating apps to try to, you know, meet people. And I was in a relationship with someone who I felt like it was just not a healthy relationship. This connection with this person lasted 2 years, but the relationship was very short, like less than a month, you know. But this person that I was dating had friends, you know, in his life who, once they knew that he had ended the relationship with me, they in a predatory way, you know, came into my inbox and things like that, and feigned trying to get to know me, like, you know, fed up to my like vegan beliefs and things like that. And so one of these people, a friend of my ex, you know, tried to hang out and tried to get to know me. And I allowed that. That's the thing. I really struggle with this particular story because I allowed this person to speak to me, have access to me. I invited him to San Diego where I was living at the time. And I was in a place where I was heartbroken because of a failed relationship, a relationship that I did not want to end, you know, without communication with that person. I was in a place where I wasn't making sensible or smart decisions. And in that headspace, I got to know this friend of my ex's, and this person happens to be a director in LA and is a prominent in like the Hollywood scene and things like that. And so there's this element of me, as I share and talk about this story, knowing that many perpetrators, many men, because that's my experience with men, is many men are in these spaces of positions of power. So he came to San Diego, and I remember the first thing I told to him as things were getting like later, and I knew maybe he would be staying over, was that I did not want to have sex. I was like, I'm still madly in love with my ex, and that's unresolved, and I'm not looking for a committed partnership with you. Therefore, I do not want to have sex with you. I was very clear about that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was very persistent and kissy and grabby and, you know, all this stuff. Here's the thing. Although this person, you know, seemed like a nice, like gentle, docile man, and I think that's how he personifies himself in the public eye. The thing is, like, I was terrified because I was like, I don't know this person. He's in my house for the first time. This is the first time he had been to my house at the time. And so, you know, when he was so persistent, I didn't fight back. I had housemates in the house. I did not want them to know that I was in distress. Like, I don't know. It was a very confusing and conflicting time. And that's how I knew that that was not an okay situation. Mm-hmm. We ended up, there was penetration. And so it wasn't consensual for me. I told him verbally, you know? And then the confusing part for me, as I thought about this after, was that physically I did continue to have, I did have sex with them. Like, but it wasn't sex. I, even now the language that I'm trying to use, like it's not sex. It was rape, you know? And I didn't get to that place until later having conversations with not only my therapist, but, you know, friends like you, Ivory, where, you know, when someone says, oh, but you said you didn't want to, but then you had sex. That's not consensual. That is rape. And it took me, you know, that happened in 2021 where I was raped, and I was, it wasn't until this year, 2023, that I really allowed myself to process that and allowed myself to speak and try not to even falter on the word rape. It doesn't feel comfortable to say, but I feel like it's important to solidify what that experience was and to not have shame or blame for the way that I mentally and emotionally handled it after the fact, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I had a similar experience. And mine was in 2022, last summer. Someone I met on a dating app, someone who presented himself to be really kind. Someone who, you know, presented himself to not be violent. I'm sorry, there's like a fly and it is in my face. but he didn't suggest that he would be unsafe. And I think I have a pretty good, you know, growing up in foster care, all the things that I've been through, I feel like I have a pretty good grasp on people who are safe. But I feel like, honestly, you can't be protected from people who are rapists. You can't be protected right. from people who are violent. It doesn't matter what defenses you think you have in place or what intuitions you have. Sometimes things just happen. And so I met him on a dating app. We were talking, we were video chatting. I felt okay. We were flirting. Yes, there was sexual attention, of course. But again, that doesn't negate non-consensual penetration. And so long story short, I invited him over. I didn't want to have sex with him because I just wanted to have a conversation. And I also think that some men see us as saying no as like a turn on or a challenge.
A challenge.
You know, or think that we're being coy and that we really want it when we don't. But no is no. Yes is yes. And I told him, like, I don't want to have sex. And I said, no, no. And he penetrated me, like you said. And I think about that time, too, because it didn't register to me at the time that that was actually rape. I had to reflect on it later. And I was actually talking to another guy that I was dating several months afterwards. And I told him about that experience. And he said, that's rape. Like, that's not okay. And I really, like, I don't know why it took another man to see that situation and tell me that for it to really break through and be crystal clear, which feels so crazy and so opposite of, like, how I show up in the world and my general awareness of things. But it was. And I think that the other part of it, and I know this happens with survivors a lot, is that I actually kept in contact with that guy who raped me. And I had
right
afterwards. Like, that is, to me, in my mind, I'm like, no, I would never do anything like that. But I did something like that. And I think that's the weird part about surviving sexual assault, about being a survivor, about having to criticize yourself and how you showed up before, during, and after the experience, and grappling with the impact of that. And I think really it just shows you, like, the trauma, the generational trauma, which is something that's been resonating in my mind. And I think I'm going to, like, take it back to people before me, right? Because how do we get here? I find myself asking, like, how do we get here? How do we get here? Me and you are both highly educated people. We have master's degrees. One day, hopefully, we'll be doctors, right? Fingers crossed. We've done a lot of personal work. We are really bonded through having a shared illness of type 1 diabetes, living as a Black woman, Black women who love to travel, Black women who are artists, just all these different similarities and things. So how do we get here?
I know. Yeah. And I love that you were speaking on that. Almost like that shame or denial too, like that of how we process assault in before, during, and after. I too was in loose contact with the person who raped me. Mm-hmm. And part of me felt like, oh, well, if I'm in contact with him, then that wasn't a violent act. Then mm-hmm. I wasn't a victim. If we're still key, kosher, it's fine. But the thing is, like, I didn't even want to continue speaking with him. And the last time I've spoken to him, he called me intoxicated, drunk, telling me that I need to come to LA and, like, inviting me to LA, but you need to come to LA. I'm having a house party and I want you to stay over. Mm. Not addressing the last thing. And I felt like this might be the last time that I spoke to him. So that's in that moment when I said, so-and-so, like, you raped me the last time. I told you I did not want to have sex and we still had, there was penetration. So what, you know, and he had no words. It was almost like uncomfortable laughter, you know? And, well, like, you know, you should come to LA anyway, and, you know, this and that. And I was like, no, I'm not coming to your house. And I'm not, you know? And for me, it was just so alarming how even addressing that act, his priority was like, why are you talking about this? No, come to my pleasure. Like, me. Like, what the hell? Like, he has no idea how his behavior and his actions and his relation to my former boyfriend, like, really fucked me up, you know?
The fucking cluelessness of it all. And I think that's also why men and people who identify as other non-gender conforming people need to be a part of this conversation and need to be a part of sex education overall. Because I also feel like my perpetrator had no fucking idea that what he did was considered rape to me. And let me tell you something. This man literally asked me to fucking marry him. He would have taken me as his wife if I would have just been like, okay, yeah, yeah.
And I think men throw marriage and love out there, though, too, as power manipulation tools. And, well, if I tell you that I love you, if I tell you that I want to marry you, then me treating you this way is, it's okay, you know, and it's not.
The thing that, like, makes me so incessantly angry about it is that he also has two daughters.
Mm.
And they're beautiful. Mm-hmm. But that's aside from the point, you know, what is he teaching and instilling in them as well?
But that's the generational maybe trauma and weaving of oppressors, rapists, people who do sexual assault. Like when they then become parents, is it having a child who is usually the victim of their behavior? You know what I'm saying? Like,
absolutely. And so I want to get into a little bit of story that reminded me of epigenetics. I talk about this all the time in the advocacy work that I do. Me and you also both deeply talk about the impact of trauma, and it's a manifestation in the form of disease, whether that be mental, physical, spiritual, or whatever. So let me tell y'all the story. Right. And again, I don't believe that I've been sent here to tell the stories of other people without their consent. But these two people in my stories, I believe I have their consent. And I believe that part of my destiny is to tell their stories. So I'm talking about my mother and her mother. So my mother and my grandmother, who I call Nana. Okay. I've only ever had one grandparent in my life, and she was just so sweet and so precious to me. I can still feel her soft skin and how she smells. She smelled like downy, you know, and just like sweet grandmotherishness. But my grandmother, she, you know, and I also talk a lot about the intersectionality of race, socioeconomic status, all of these different things that really do inform this conversation that we're having here right now. My grandmother was raped by the KKK in front of her children, right? And so this is a woman who was born in 1927. And if we think we don't have agency now, can you only imagine the lack of agency that they endured and went through back in the day? And I'm giving you that context just so that you can understand, how did I get here, right? How did I get here? Because I think that we also find ourselves in situations where it's like, oh, this doesn't actually make sense for me. This is actually not on brand.
Right.
Me. So how did I get here? And I think that sometimes those answers lie in our ancestors. Sometimes those answers lie in our parents and in their parents and in their parents. And so it's important to look at our own histories and understanding how we got here. So my grandmother, who was born in 1927, her name is Ida, loved her dearly. She was raped in front of her children by the Ku Klux Klan. Right. And so we've talked about before about how having these loose definitions of sexual assault can be protected. These men were white men. I'm sure they were powerful. I'm sure they owned businesses. I'm sure they were respected community members. They went and they sexually assaulted my grandmother in front of her children. And y'all know that I always talk about this too, because I'm a doula, and the health of Black women, especially during labor and delivery, is a severe passion of mine. And we don't talk about it enough, so I'm going to talk about it. But when you think about epigenetics, and when you think about the health of Black women in particular, so as a woman, I identify as a woman. I'm assuming that you identify as a woman, but please.
I identify as a woman. Yes.
Okay. I don't want to like misrepresent or assume your gender, but I just did. Sorry. That's not a good practice, but we're learning here. We're growing. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes.
While we're at it, what are your pronouns, Dallas?
She, her. Thank you.
Okay. Awesome. Mine are also she, her, and hers. And so as women, biological women, we were actually present in the bodies of our grandmothers. Because our mothers were present in the bodies of their mothers. And although there have been a few studies, which I'll get into very momentarily, about women being born with all the eggs that they'll ever produce. So in theory, we existed inside of our mothers as they were inside of their mothers. Before they were even developing fetuses, we were in them as eggs. Yes. We were the eggs inside of the eggs. So that's two generations that women carry around. And epigenetics is basically, long story short, the impact of trauma on genes, right? So when you think about women, us, Dallas, us, we are holding our grandchildren right now who are daughters.
Yeah.
Their eggs are inside of our eggs in theory, right? So anything that happens to us is going to epigenetically impact those future children, those future little girls who are also going to be carrying two generations inside of them. So I say all that to say, that's the first set of trauma. And that's all I know, right? Because I don't know about my grandmother's mother or my grandmother's grandmother. So we can stop there, right? But let's go to my own mother. So my mother, I was in foster care for 17 years because my mother has extreme mental illness, mainly bipolar disorder and schizophrenia. It is alleged, because we don't really know, because Black families do a great deal of not talking about things that are serious like this. And we also have a I think, a problematic stance on how we view and talk about and educate one another on sexual assault, not only as a definition and as, you know, just life advice, but how it actually happens in our own families, mm-hmm. our own people. Allegedly, my mother was molested or sexually assaulted in a church setting at the age of 14. And that's kind of how this all began. Right. So I don't know what happened to her. But keep in mind, again, I was inside of my mother. Mm-hmm. I was a little egg inside of that 14-year-old girl who was sexually assaulted, holding my own little eggs mm-hmm. for two generations after me as well.
Yes.
So it's deep, right? So when I ask myself, how did I get here? I absolutely need to assume responsibility for my own actions, but also have a clear understanding that it's not just about me. It's about epigenetics. It's about family history. It's about the societal context in which we live. It's about the laws and legislations that do and don't, mostly don't protect women or any victim of sexual assault from this happening. And then so we get to me. Right. So that all happens before me. That's
right.
That's before me. We get to me, little Ivory. So, and I've been having these kind of like dreams, these like rememberings and memories of being sexually assaulted as a tiny kid, but I can't remember that. I'm going to work with my therapist because I want to get to the bottom of that. So maybe something happened way even before I remember. And I think that happens more than a lot of people realize. You were saying earlier, Dallas, in our conversations about how people are victims of sexual assault and they just don't talk about it. They just act like it never happened. Like, oh no, not me.
Right.
Which, side note, okay, even though I've been through these experiences, I love sex.
And that's the thing that we also need to talk about. Is that connected to the trauma? Is that just our being? Is there other factors? You know, for me, like I said, I'm a very spiritual being. So I believe that sex is a true fusion of pleasure, but also healing, but also communication, but also data, but also, you know, it's what brings life into this world, you know? And yes, there's science and all this stuff, but when we're talking about sex and the connection between two bodies, it's something that is truly magical. And so to be assaulted, to be raped, to have trauma from different generations, you know, feeding into us, you know, sometimes I've had an estranged relationship with the pride for how much I enjoy sex. I love, love, love sex. And I like to have it a lot, you know,
me too, girl.
Big but here. I am now in a place as an adult, and possibly because of the traumas that I've experienced, perhaps that rape in 2021 and other things, you know, surrounding that, that have made me have a lot more, like, discipline. I'm currently celibate, and it is by choice, but also partly, you know, if I find someone who would be a great fit and who makes me feel safe and other non-negotiables, then I would love, love, love to share my body with. But, you know, I'm all about health, healing, and ethical. So it would have to be an ethically monogamous relationship. There'd have to be communication and things like that. But just because for me, not only living with type 1 diabetes, but just experiences, I just feel like it's too traumatic for me to be sharing my body with so many people, like just on a cellular level. This has nothing to do with judgment or, like, you know, people's lifestyles. It's just, for me, it really affects as an empath, as like a very gentle spirit. If I am being penetrated, mm-hmm. if I'm being penetrated by someone who has low vibrational energy or unhealed trauma that they are not addressing and that they're just feeding into me, you know, that, I mean, it took me 2 years to heal from a relationship that was only 1 month long because of these exchanges that I was having along the way, you know? So,
yeah,
I think I'm happy that you mentioned that, because like I think I just struggle with that sometimes. Like, I do love sex and I love sharing and being in partnership with another body in that way, in that pleasurable sense. But when you experience like trauma and things like that, it's, you know, for me, I've even asked myself in the past, like, should I be enjoying this so much? Like, should I be seeking this out? Like, you know, so much, like when I'm in relationships, you know, and
I agree. I think I think for me, it's mostly healthy. I really do. But for different reasons. And we've talked about this before. I'm just a really resilient person on many different levels. And those of you who know my story know, Dallas knows a lot about my story. And I'm sure I'll share it with you all eventually, bits and pieces. But I don't, and of course, I'm just a really inquisitive person. So of course, I've questioned my relationship to sex and how it pertains to my own personal experiences, which I'll share very quickly. But I think it's okay to love sex. And I've also experienced kind of like people who I suspect have issues or have had experiences with sexual assault, but have not dealt with it, making me feel bad about how I do enjoy sex or how it's something that, you know, is an important part of how I am in relationship romantically with other people. So I say all that to say, my first memorable one that I can remember, because again, I've been having these like strange dreamlike memories of like being a young child and having something not quite right. But I think I was about 8 years old, and this happened outside of foster care. So one happened outside of foster care, one happened inside of foster care. And my mother had a boyfriend who was a Jamaican man with twin daughters around my same age. And he tried to rape me. He took me in a shed. He took me to work with him. First of all, I don't know why my mother let him take me to work with him, but she did. He took me to work with him. He was a construction worker, so he was working on someone's house. It was the back of their house. It was their shed. I just remember being really, it was summertime. The shed kind of had like dust floating, you know, how like in the summertime, like dust will just like float through like dark spaces. And it's just kind of weird. It was really dusty for some reason. And he took me in the shed and he asked to touch my vagina. And I just remember, I've always been a fighter. I've always been a survivor. I just remember saying no, no. And him getting closer and closer to me and then me running away. Now keep in mind, I'm not the only child of my mother. And so it wasn't just me being around this perpetrator. So that was the first incident. And I didn't tell anyone at all. I didn't tell anyone. And I think that's often what happens with sexual assault. We just keep it to ourselves. We don't tell people. For whatever reasons, we don't feel safe. We don't feel sure. We don't know what's happened. At 8 years old, I'm not even sure that I knew what that was, to be honest with you. I mean, my mother had always talked to me about sex, but it's one thing to hear things. It's another thing to live.
Experience, yeah.
Right. So, you know, it's one thing to be educated and to be familiar, but it's another thing to go through it. So that was the first time, around eight years old. The second time was while I was in foster care. This individual was in a relationship with one of my family members. And I think I was like 10 years old. And I remember because my boobs just came out of nowhere. I went from being like flat chested one night and I woke up with like C's. I'm like a 10-year-old. Now we know I have big boobies. Mm-hmm. But just picture these on like a 10-year-old, okay?
I know. New, yeah.
You knew. They were new. They were sitting up. I didn't know what to do with them, of course. They were there. And I remember this person, I remember because it was SpongeBob on the TV. And he was like, come watch TV with me. And I was like, okay. And then he's like, let's lay on the floor together. And this, again, SpongeBob is in front of me. We're laying on the floor. He's behind me. And he's like rubbing on my breast at 10 years old. Did I tell anyone? No. Because who am I going to tell?
Right.
What am I going to tell? Do I even have the language at that time? Do I have mental and emotional intelligence at that time to be able to understand what needs to be done in that situation? Do I feel protected and safe enough if I was to share this? No.
That's the thing. Like, do we feel safe to open up and share? And I feel like for your situation, it's like, no. For my situation, it's no. Other people that I've talked to, no. Like, it doesn't, even society, if we go out of like our family and people, friends that we could talk to, you know, anyone, just as a society, it's not safe for people to talk about being victimized by someone who rapes or sexually assaults you, you know?
And not just people, but Black women and Black girls, especially.
Especially.
And so, if you get into massage noir, if you don't know what it is, I really highly suggest you looking into it. But we also have a definition for you as well. So Oxford Dictionary defines massage noir as dislike of, contempt for, or ingrained prejudice against Black women. Here's an example. Massage noir shows how sexism and racism manifest in Black women's lives to create intersecting forms of oppression. And I think for me, as a little Black girl who never got the chance to be a little kid, I was always adultified. You know, I was always taking care of my little sister. I was always being responsible. I didn't even cry. I'm in like 40 days and 40 nights of crying right now, Dallas, because I feel like I am releasing all the tears that my inner child never got to. And it's heavy. It's sad. It's intense. And to be honest with you, I know more Black women than not who never got to be children, whether they were in foster care or not. And I think also just when you think about our stories in particular, how having type 1 diabetes, having a chronic illness as a child, I think any child with a chronic illness or serious illness also doesn't really get that chance to be carefree and to play and to engage in the world in a way that is childlike. And so I say all that to think about intersectionalities. And we mentioned earlier about being in contact with our rapists, with our assaulters. And I added that man who molested me on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And to this day, I don't know why I added him on Facebook. Mm-hmm. I do not know why. I don't understand it. And a lot of people, again, a lot of survivors will stay in contact with the rapists, with the perpetrators of assault. And I think that we really need to learn about more about shame and about suspending judgment in the healing process. Right. So here's another definition, healing. Again, Oxford Dictionary, the process of making or becoming sound or healthy again. Mm-hmm. And first and foremost, I want to take it back to the people who are actually committing these acts of violence against people. I think that are often, and I've written about this, I've talked about this, often oppressors don't even know they're oppressed. Right. So these people who are committing these terrible violent crimes towards people, towards other people, yes, they are violent. Yes, they have been oppressive, but they are also being oppressed. They are also victims of violence and they don't understand it. And I think that is why we continue to perpetuate it as a society and allow it to happen. It goes back to education. Kids need to be educated on the words about their body, the anatomy of their body, literally. It is really dangerous to not teach kids that something is a breast, something is a nipple, something is a vagina.
It's a vagina, yes.
Anus, mm-hmm. You know, like that is where in court, things will get tricky if kids can't identify these anatomical structures in the body. So education is important. Giving kids not only the vocabulary words to talk about their physical anatomy, but also to talk about actions that other people take with them or against them. And then the other part of that is the emotional intelligence to recognize when you need help and to just be able to communicate your experiences and just good communication in general. Because if your kids don't feel safe talking to you, there's some work to be done. There's some work to be done.
But even as adults, if we're not able to speak to our friends, our family, our support network, our systems, you know, our tribe, then work still needs to be done, you know? And it was a huge shift for me, Ivory, like when you and I had one of our many, many conversations and just opening up about this person in particular and my situation in particular, it's like to be able to call it what it is and to have that validating like exchange of stories and experiences and things like that. For me, that was the first step for my healing journey. And I think it's a great idea to kind of share, you know, because we've talked about the heavy experiences, we've talked about being made to feel uncomfortable and violated and even our behaviors in relation to that and how we feel about our behaviors. So with healing, you know, for me, I'm a communicator. So the first step for healing was really to address it, talk about it and call it what it was. And I'm still on this healing journey, you know, that happened in 2021. I think that it will be something, as you mentioned earlier, the epigenetics, like, you know, my future children are in me and like my grandchildren, you know, and I want to do the work to do the healing that I can do. You know, I think if I just sat back and just said, okay, well, I'll just like, maybe I'll talk about it or, you know, anything like that, I don't think that my body would rid of the feeling of trauma, you know, the trauma's still there in my genes and my hair, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But there's work that I'm doing to rid the trauma. So I wanted to ask you maybe like how, like your journey with healing, like how, where are you with with that and with that man? Are you still connected with him online? And
I'm going to have to check my Facebook to see if I'm still his friend or not. The other man I don't talk to, like literally after he asked me to be his wife, I was like, you have to be fucking kidding me. Like the lack of awareness is egregious. And it's just utterly heartbreaking that you're also responsible for raising two future young women who are going to be beautiful no matter what. But like, my God, I'm fearful for like their boundaries and what they'll deem acceptable from men. So my own healing journey, I think I'm just at a point in life where I'm a little tenderoni. And I don't think people are realizing that because they're used to me being so stoic and so serious and so like, I don't cry, but no girl, yeah. I be crying, y'all.
You weep. No, yes, that's so fantastic. I'm honestly happy to hear that because I remember in college, you were going through so much and taking care of your mom and things like that. And it was wild to me that through all of that, you were not, you know, like releasing. So I'm happy that you are now in a place where that is part of the healing journey to like.
Yeah, crying is. But I had to get to a place where I didn't feel shamed or regret about crying. And I really had to get to a place to where even if it's uncomfortable, I still push through it because I know that there's scientific studies about like the composition, the chemical composition of tears and different types of tears. And we can drop it in the show notes so y'all can see, but you know, different tears have different chemical compounds in them. And so realizing that like crying and grieving through trauma is an important part of it. And so giving myself permission to cry, I think was one of the biggest things that I'm doing in terms of healing, specifically the sexual assault. The second thing I think is easing into the soft life. Mm-hmm. And allowing the people around me to hold me, allowing the people around me to choose me, especially when it comes to dating and men. My goodness, allowing men to show up and do all the work is like the most beautiful thing. Let me tell you something, girls. If a man wants you, he's going to show you that he wants you. He's going to have you. He's going to do all of the things, but he's also going to listen to you. Because if you tell him no, he's going to respect that. But he's going to do all of the things that you want and need from a partner to do to make you and to show you feel, to make you feel loved, to make you feel valued, to make you feel wanted. So easing into the soft life in terms of not only allowing men to show up and do what the hell it is they were made to do in the most consenting, positive, powerful, empowering way, but also allowing those around me to love me and to support me and to hold me. And then last but not least, just continuing to do that inner work of addressing any like, you know, mindset issues. Like if I do find myself judging myself while I'm crying, like, girl, why are you judging yourself? No one's even here right now. You're in the shower right now. No one sees you crying. Why are you judging yourself? You know? And so just continue to doing that work with my therapist. And again, even with my community and of normalizing crying and processing and emotional vulnerability and also continuing to grow my own understanding of different things that have happened, not only just in terms of sexual assault, but just in life in general. What about you? What things have you done to work on your healing?
I mean, as you know, I recently moved into my own apartment. So this is just me, myself, my own energy. That was a really big thing. I wasn't able to process the rape. I was living in a house with other people where the rape occurred. And I was spending a lot of time in my room because of depression where the act had happened, you know? So I needed to get out of there. And then when I relocated to LA, I still wasn't really processing things because it was like a new start of a new job, this and this and this. And, you know, I wouldn't say that there was kind of like a big breakdown, but there were moments, I think, where I did kind of like snap and have like these moments with self where I was like, you have to address this. You have to talk about this to yourself or to someone. And so I have been in therapy. And so that is a big advice that I have for anybody and everybody, especially Black women, especially people in our community. My experiences with having a Black female therapist is one where I feel truly supported on my journey with my goals for mental and holistic health. Mm-hmm. And so talking about that with my therapist has given me some tools to kind of like work through questions to be asked, behaviors that I can be mindful of and things like that. I think I think also the communication with the female friends that I have in my life, and some male friends too, just how they treat women and how they treat their own body and treat others, and even things with like pleasure mapping. This is something that I love to do when in a partnered relationship, is to show someone where the pleasure points are on your body and have them observe, you know, learn. And then for them to show you where the pleasure points are on your, on their body, and for you to learn, see how they touch themselves, practice safe, consensual touch and things like that. So I'm in an odd space right now where I'm not in a relationship and I feel like I haven't had physical touch, and I'm really in a place where I know that that is necessary for my healing. Like even just like self-touch, I'm like, I do a lot, like I'm like self-hugging and things like that, or like, you know, like I'll like touch my ears and things like, but touch is so important. Mm-hmm. And to not have that, you know, I'm just trying to find other ways. I'm not ready right now to be in, I think, a committed relationship. I think there's some things that I'm looking for before I can fully give all of myself, you know, because I felt like I wasn't giving myself to these people in the past. I feel like things were, I was being picked apart and taken and leech, like these men that I've experienced feel like leeches, you know? Mm-hmm. And so right now I'm just restoring myself, like getting to know people, getting to know myself, exercising a lot more, focusing on listening to good music, having dance parties. I spend a lot of time in front of mirrors.
Somatic movement.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think getting reintroduced to my body has been really important, like being in front of mirrors. And it might sound uncomfortable or odd, but I think everyone with a vagina should sit with a mirror and look at their vagina and see.
Oh, yeah, check everything out.
See what's look at them little labias. See what's up, you know? See how, is there hair? Is there not? Like, keep checking it out, you know? I'm very big on knowing what's going on with my body, and like not only internally, but like on the outside physically, like scanning, you know? And also affirmations. Like when you experience trauma, when you experience something where someone has touched you, said something, done something where you feel like you did not have control of that, your body did not feel good, it's so important for you to not be a bully to yourself mentally, you know, look at yourself in the mirror, say some affirmations, like you're gorgeous today. Like, I love, love, love the way you make people feel. Like, mm-hmm. you have such great energy. You're a great listener. You made a bomb meal last week. Like, you're such a great chef. Like, you know, just do say things that will help make you feel rooted in the love that you need others to treat you with, you know? Like, mm-hmm. I love myself so much, and I think it's bothered a lot of former partners. And I think because they saw that love, it's almost like they wanted to do something to put a kink in that, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so.
That reminds me too, massage is a great way to get touch if you feel like you can't get it. Personally, you can go pay someone to touch you in a consensual safe way. It's also something I feel like is so important for just releasing trauma from the body, and then also like taking care of your body. Of course, we're always going to advocate for taking care of your mind through therapy, and there's more than one form of therapy. Talk therapy is not the only kind of therapy, so don't be afraid to try different therapists or try different methodologies, but also taking care of your body, cleaning yourself consistently.
Yes.
You know, do what you
need to do. Take a lot of showers.
Do what you need to do to feel beautiful, to feel pretty within your means. You don't always have to pay for it, but if you can, treat yourself. You know, get that hair removed if you don't like it. Keep it if you like it. Get your hair done if you want. You know, cut those dead ends off. Hair holds energy. Just do what you need to do to take care of your body. Your body is your temple. And I'm not saying that from a religious standpoint, but I'm saying that from, this is our home. This is where we live.
Yes, we
live in these bodies. So keep them clean and keep them cared for out of reverence and adoration. We're doing the work. We're not perfect. I think one of the biggest takeaways from this conversation is that we need to educate people on not only what sexual assault is, not only what the body is, but also what consent is. Because if these boys who did these things to us had known, maybe it would be a different story. Maybe, just maybe it'd be a different story. And women are not the only victims of sexual assault, and men are not the only perpetuators of sexual assault. We want to be very clear about that as well. Anyone and everyone can be a victim. Anyone and everyone can be a perpetuator. But I guess, what is our call to action? What are we asking of people, Dallas?
Well, for me, it's like, I struggle with this whole thing of like, oh, well, maybe they didn't know. I feel like without a doubt, if someone says no, there's no feigning. I didn't know. Like, you speak the same language that I do. No is the same. We agree what no means, you know? And so I think, you know, I had a conversation with my rapist after on the phone where he was inviting me to get more sex, like, you know, in LA after the fact.
More rape.
Yeah. Thank you. Yes. More rape. And I have this question that I'm struggling with is, can there be retribution? Can there be a recovered or reformed rapist, sexual, assailant, you know, oppressor? Is it possible to, and is it possible to truly forgive, you know? For me, I'm at a place now where I have not been able to forgive this person because I haven't fully released the trauma from my body. You know what I'm saying? It still lingers. It's still in my thoughts. It's still something. And it might be a thought that I have forever, but I know that I feel not healed from it. It's just a feeling. So that I haven't even started the process of forgiving because I'm not at a healed place. And I'm not going to, if I commit to healing and commit to forgiving, I'm not going to tell someone, oh, I forgive you, or I'm not going to tell myself that I've forgiven someone when I truly have not made that place. So that's where I am with that. But I, you know, I struggle to think, like, even what would it take from my rapist to for me to be able to forgive and for him to have a different, what would you call it? Like, label or, you know, reputation in my mind. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Legacy.
Yeah. So many thoughts, but we need to wrap this up. I think my call to action is education first and foremost. I think too many people literally do not have the words, again, whether that be the anatomy or just the understanding of consent, the understanding of sexual assault, the understanding of, you know, what do you do after someone says no, but you want to keep going? So really educating people on sexual education first and foremost,
yes,
but also the complex and nuanced reality of these different scenarios. So giving people access to understand their own bodies and to understand, you know, the impact of their actions in terms of, at what point do you become a rapist?
Right.
And then I think the other glaring issue is that we need to have a federal understanding of sexual assault. We need to have a federal definition of sexual assault. We need to have a federal definition of rape. We need to have a federal definition of consent and any other relating words or phrases as it comes to prosecuting people who perpetuate these sexual acts of violence. And then realistically, I'm just going to plan to personally continue to talk about my story, continue to do my personal healing work, and to continue to educate the children of my lives, whether they be my own or my nieces and nephews or the people who just come into my lives who are kids. You're going to hear from Titi about these different things, because I'm going to do my best to try to give you all the equipment and tools and skills that I can possibly impart onto you so that you can at least be equipped to deal with life, because life is going to keep lifing. But how many tools can you take in your belt to navigate that? And I guess my final call to action would be to everyone out there. Like, can you be honest with yourself about your past experiences with trauma, with sexual assault? Were you a perpetrator? Were you a victim? Were you both?
We both, yeah.
And can you be willing enough and brave enough to talk about that in a healing way so that we can all move forward?
So. Thank you so much, Ivory. And this is April 2023. So this is is this Sexual Assault Month or Sexual Health Month? Or
let's look it up very quickly. I believe that it is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, but let me double confirm at YouTube University or Google University.
I loved your like calls to action too about education and about emotional honesty. I feel like being emotionally honest with yourself, like what have you experienced and what have you perpetrated? What have you contributed to our society? And yeah, I would like for everyone who's interacting with others, you know, to, which is all of us every day, to intentionally act with love and care and respect. Rape cannot happen if love, respect, and care, you know, are there. Sexual assault cannot happen if you respect, honor, love, and care for someone, you know? So yeah. And if you see something, say something, reach out to your resources. Like I said before, mm-hmm. mental health, find a therapist, find someone you could talk to and be honest with, you know, I'm going to be having some very real honest conversations with my therapist soon. And do I like getting vulnerable? Not all the time. It's very uncomfortable to go through the dark night of the soul, but we all have to go through it in order to come out of it bigger, stronger, and more educated. And like you said, equipped with tools on our tool belt.
Yes. So thank you for that. April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. April is also Stress Awareness Month. And there's a myriad of other themes that are surrounded by mental and emotional health and well-being. And fun fact, very quickly, in 1915, the civil rights activist Booker T. Washington created National Negro Health Week to kind of bring light to the health disparities facing Black people, Black folks in general. And so we've talked here today about the impact of epigenetics. We've talked about generational trauma and issues. And so we have to definitely uplift that. And thank you, Booker T. Washington, for kind of setting precedent for us to have an entire month of awareness about these things that definitely impact us, not only people, but as women and as souls and spirits in this, floating around on this rock in the galaxy. So on that note, thank you so much, Jalis, for your time and your energy and your vulnerability. Hopefully someone can learn from our stories and grow. If you want to get in contact with either one of us, we will drop that information in the show notes. Mm-hmm. Any final words before we go?
Just thank you so much for having me. Thank you so much for sharing and for holding space for me. It's always a pleasure speaking with you. And this conversation is so necessary and important to have, especially for Black women. To show this kind of vulnerability and to open up. So thank you. And I appreciate what I've learned from having you in my life. Thank you so much.
Likewise. On that note, thank you all so much. You have a wonderful day and a wonderful life. And we hope that you tune back in soon.
Bye.
The Interviews Podcast is a production of the Safe Camp Audio Network, which is a division of Youth Voices Rising via Fostering Media Connections. Please visit safecampaudio.org on the web or Safe Camp Audio on all major social media. This podcast was produced and mixed by Christine Onjoko. If you enjoyed this episode, we'd love it if you consider sharing, subscribing, and or giving us a 5-star rating on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you download your podcast.